But in any case, we're ready to go. This is Product Launch Formula. Going to be answering a lot of questions for you. You can send in. This is what we're doing. Is I'm pulling questions from the survey that people filled out. Like after you went through Module 1, at the bottom of Module 1, there's a link to a survey. And I want to encourage you. We'll have those surveys every single module. So I want to encourage you to fill those out because I do go through and I read all the responses, and it helps me. It helps me mold the course as we go forward, and it's where I pull these questions from when we get on these calls. The other place to ask questions is via the Instant Teleseminar. If you're listening in via the web, then you can see right in front of you. There's a place where you can go ahead and put in your questions. And so you can put them in there. John's in the background. He's going through those questions live as we're cranking through this. And, what he's doing is he's sending them over on Instant Messenger to me. John, for some reason, I can't see you on Instant Messenger. I'm logged in, so maybe you should try restarting it. Betty can see me. I can see Betty, but I can't see you. So you might not be logged in there. In any case, the third way that we're going to pull questions on this call, This is something that's a little bit experimental, is for the people who are dialed in over the phone. Later on, I'll have a code where you can enter, and that will basically, if you have a question, then that will, in a sense, raise your hand, and I'll be able to see that you've raised your hand and select you and unmute your line and then take your question. Okay, it looks like I do see John on Instant Messenger. So, anyways, that'll be the third way we take questions. That'll be towards the end of the call. I'm not sure how many we're going to be able to get to, and that'll be somewhat of an experiment, but, that's what we're doing. So, I'm going to just go get started and go right into these questions and start cranking through them. We're going to go at least 60 minutes. Usually I end up going longer, but that's what we're going to be starting with. Okay. Let me check the first question. The first question is, I'm concerned about one thing. It's related to solutions for technical problems of a launch. Let's see. And they say, we haven't covered that yet. I know you're going to cover it later. Can I ask you once we cover that category? Of course you can. Technical problems. They do happen. They have on occasion. Like when I first rolled out Product Launch Formula 2 back in March, I had some really nasty problems with the server crashing on me. This is what I'll say about the technical problems, though, is generally the kind of problems I had in March with my server crashing were related to the fact that I was doing this huge, epic, gigantic launch. I had tens of thousands of people landing on my website within a span of a few minutes. It's unlikely that your first launch is going to be to that scale. That wasn't like the first launch I ever did. My first launch I ever did was a tiny little thing, and then I grew, and it gradually grew from there. So basically, your experience will grow with you as you go through these launches. And your first launch, the technical stuff, it's generally not a challenge. I mean, you can even go out and get a $10 monthly hosting account, and that will handle your typical five- or six-figure launch. It's not until you get up into the upper six figures and the seven figures that you start to have to really worry about serious, serious, hardware technical issues. So don't be too concerned. Don't be overly concerned with the technical aspects of this, because until by the time you get to the level where you're going to have those kind of problems, you're going to have a lot of experience to deal with it. Okay. Here's a great question. I've worked on some email copy similar to your tax sale, but adjusted for the season. I would love to have some feedback from you if possible. Here it is. And this is the copy that this person wrote in. Okay, this is a bit embarrassing, and basically they're selling spices, like herbs and spices. Okay, this is a bit embarrassing, but I just finished blending 11 pounds of brand new spices I didn't even plan on making yet. I do that sometimes. I should have seen it coming, really. We've had all kinds of new subscribers to our oil and spice club lately, and I started getting carried away coming up with flavors to make for them in 2009. You see, once I get on a roll of testing oils and spice blends, it's just hard. It's just hard for me to stop. And before you know it, I have a kitchen full of fresh spices that need to go out immediately. So bottom line, I'm putting our premium ice oil and spice sampler on sale for the next couple of days. Call it an early Thanksgiving sale or a really early Christmas sale. And then it goes on a little bit more. We don't normally discount this, but we're discounting it now because of this. I think that would work very, very well. It's a perfect adaptation of the tax sale. And the deal with the tax sale is it's an easy to do mini tiny quick launch is what it is. And the reason once you start discounting your prices, if you discount your prices frequently, what you've done, you're no longer having sales. What you've done is you've essentially lowered your prices. And the people watching you know that you lower your prices frequently, and they'll stop buying from you at normal price. You know, you don't want lower prices. And if you start putting stuff on sale, then, what you've done is you've just lowered your price. What a thing like the tax sale or this spice sale, this would work really well. And the reason it works is because there's a reason why you're putting it on sale, and you don't put it on sale but very often. So, important that you do it infrequently and that you've got the reason why. And when you've got the reason why, then you don't lower the perceived value. You know, it's a one-shot deal. There's a strong reason why. I think that this spice sale would be especially strong if I don't know this for a fact, but, if these spices, if they're fresh spices, and so they need to be sold and used in a relatively short period of time as opposed to, they can sit there for 6 months and still be just fine. If they're not necessarily go bad, but they should be used when they're fresh, then that makes it more that much more compelling of a story. You know, I've got 11 pounds of brand new spices. As you know, this stuff should really, these spices are best when they're used, quickly. So I don't want these sitting around, and so that's why I decided to have this crazy sale, just because I got way carried away last weekend. So I decided to do this sort of a one-shot deal, this sale. It's perfect timing for you for Thanksgiving or early Christmas. In fact, it'd make a great gift for you to give for Christmas. And, I normally don't discount this stuff, especially at this time of the year when the demand's so great. But, I got a little silly last weekend, and I just picked up way too much. And this is great stuff, but I just have way too much on my hands. So we are going to put it on sale. Never done this before, yada, yada, yada. I think that would work well, and I think that's a very good adaptation of the tax sale. And it shows how that technique can be adapted easily. Let me grab a drink of water here, which I'll do frequently while we're on the call. There's the next question. I'm just starting out, and I have only 2 hours per day to dedicate to my business at this point. I'm concerned about the time to do launches, especially a JV launch. Is it realistic to think about launches when you have just 2 hours per day? This is the deal. The JV launches, they are a lot of work, okay? They're epic things. They take a lot of work. They dominate your life, and you make a ton of money. But it's probably not the place to start when you're just doing something 2 hours a day. I mean, when you just have 2 hours a day, you're working a job, you got something else going on, it's probably not the place to start. You start with a smaller internal launch, which this is something you'll see me emphasize over and over. You can start with a big joint venture launch. I've seen it done. I know it works, but you're playing without a net, so to speak. I will always advise people, almost always advise people, to start off with an internal launch, something smaller, maybe even a seed launch, and sort of build up your experience that way. That way you get a lot of the work out of the way, and then when you come back and do the joint venture launch, then you've already got a big chunk of the work done if you've done the internal launch. You can just repeat what you've done for the internal launch and add on the JV component, and that basically what it allows you to do is it allows you to spread the work out over a couple different launches. So, if I just had 2 hours a day, I think it would be very difficult to pull off a big JV launch. Go with something smaller. Go with an internal launch. Go with a seed launch, a mini launch, once you start to get results there, that will allow you to transform your schedule and get more than 2 hours per day to spend in your business. Another question. How does the event-based launch work with or in place of an evergreen lead generation and autoresponder system? Do you keep launching to the leads list over and over for the same product? Does this really work better than an autoresponder sequence that everyone gets at their own pace? Basically, I love autoresponders. I love putting people on autoresponders. And so what I would do is, there's a few different ways you can do this. One way what they do is they build the launch right into their autoresponder. So someone gets on your autoresponder, and for a week you send them, the normal autoresponder stuff, and then somewhere in they've been on your list for maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 days, and then you can actually start a launch sequence on them, and have that launch sequence be right in the autoresponder. So for the next 2 weeks, they basically will get a launch sequence. This works. It works really, really well. In fact, Leslie Karsner, is one of our examples in Module 1 with her love letters business, and she did this very, very effectively with built the launch right into her autoresponder. No reason you can't do that. The other thing you can do is you can have your autoresponder set up, and it's normally selling stuff on an ongoing evergreen basis, but every now and then you launch a new product. I mean, that's what I do. You launch a new product, or you can have a sale like the tax sale or that spice sale, every now and then. I like 2 times a year. That's what I typically would do when I was doing the trading stuff, when I was selling the trading information. I'd have people join in the list all year long and trying to sell to them all year long. And then twice a year we would do a little launch that was generally revolved around either pricing discount or we would, offer extra bonuses, or if for the subscription we might give a lengthier subscription for, so they get 4 months for the price of 3, something like that. Some type of a promotion or a sale, and then we would do a launch around that, and we do that twice a year, like clockwork, and then one or two other times a year we would introduce new products. So we would do anywhere from three to four promotions per year to this list. So I think that really works effectively, and that's sort of the model I've always got, is try to continually do lead generation, put people on your autoresponder system, sell them stuff you normally would sell them, and then either come up with launches for the products you normally sell or come out with new products, and do that anywhere 3 times a year is really what I would tend to do. Okay, next question. Oh, and then further, they said, does this really work better than an autoresponder sequence that everyone gets at their own pace? And I think I sort of answered that. Yeah, it does work better, but I like to use both of them. I had a product once where I launched the product. It did really well at the launch, and then for 2 years I sold that product, and I made a bunch of money. But then, later on I did something similar, but I launched the product and pulled it off the market and then relaunched the product. And for that, I'm not at liberty to say what that product was, but for that product it actually worked better to have it off the market and occasionally re-release it than it did to leave it on the market the entire time. And I do know Martin Spite over, he was doing like a health food type of product, and that's the way it worked for him as well. When he would release it every 3 or 4 months instead of having it on the market continually, he would actually have more sales that way. So a lot of different ways, depends on your market, your exact product. But, it's really effective to combine autoresponders and launches. How many people do you need to have on your list in order to ask them what they want to get reliable information? If only 3 people fill out your survey, that's not a lot to go on. Nope, it's not. 3's not. Generally, if you can get, I think it's amazing, though, how lower response you need to start to get the kind of information you need. And I think once you get 20 to 30 responses, I mean, frankly, I'd rather have 200 to 300 responses, but once you get 20 to 30 responses, you've got, 80% of the information you're going to get, 80% of it, and probably all the information you need. It's the old 80-20 rule. You know, those first 20 or 30 responses are going to tell you really what you need. Because typically, when you're going to do a product, there's going to be two or three, objections, two or three main areas that people are really interested in. And often it's amazing that, you know, going into the thing, of those three, two of them will be things you never thought of. It's just amazing how this works. But if, you know, those two or three big areas, objections, needs, those are going to show up in those first 20 or 30 responses. They're probably going to show up in your first 10 responses. But, yeah, I think if you can get to 20 or 30 responses, then you're golden. You've got probably as much information as you really need. Okay, next question. During the blog, the conversation on the blog, what's the incentive for 160 people to leave a comment? Do you have a contest? What percentage of your list left comments? In other words, if I wanted to get 160 comments, about how many people should I expect to have on my list? Well, that's a tough question. Let's see. Let's start back at the beginning. During the conversation, what's the incentive for? Generally, there is no incentive. Now, I have done contests. I did a contest when I originally released the Product Launch Formula version 1, and I probably got 800 or 900 comments. And that was very, very effective. In fact, I think I was the first person to use it, certainly in the internet marketing space, the idea of using a contest to get huge social proof on a blog. That can work really, really well. And I often advise people to do that. You know, that in that case, the contest was I would give away a copy of the course if people would tell me how they were, you know, why they needed the product and how they were going to use it. And that generated huge comments, huge social proof, a lot of that commitment and consistency where people were spending time telling me why they needed the product, and then I turn around and ask them to buy the product, and it was very, very effective. I wouldn't fix it on any specific number, like 160 comments. You know, I mean, if you get 30 or 40 good comments, it's almost, you know, it's nearly as powerful as 160 comments. What percentage of my list? You know, it's 160 would be a minuscule percentage of my list. What's more important is what percentage of the visitors, and to tell you the truth, I don't have that number. I'm not sure what that number is. You know, it's going to be small. I mean, if you have, you know, if you want to get 160 comments, you're going to have thousands of people looking at that blog post. That's the way the percentages work. But you don't need... You know, once you start to get some comments, it's the chicken and the egg. Once people start placing comments, then more people will place comments as they see the conversation. So what you really need to do is really ask the people, your raving fans, your hyper-responsive folks, if you can get them there and making a comment, then more people will see that and then they'll make comments. It becomes the thing where that's the thing to do. As they read the blog, that becomes the way your community, they see themselves as acting as people that leave comments for blogs. And so you try to build up those hyper-responsive, those raving fans, and ask them to make a comment. That's the key to getting comments, is ask people to make comments. Let's see. Next question. This question is about, you know, technical stuff. I'm trying to choose a new website provider, an email provider, an affiliate software provider, teleconference provider. Is that included? Okay, so I'll just give you some quick ones here. For websites, for years and years and years, I used FutureQuest, FutureQuest.net, FutureQuest.net, for hosting. I like those guys. You know, not for probably doing a multi-million-dollar launch, because you can't get dedicated machines through them. But they're really good. They've got great support. Support's email support, but it's really wonderful support. Other ones that I've used, in that $8 or $9 a month deal, is Lunar Pages, Lunar, L-U-N-A-R, Pages, P-A-G-E-S, LunarPages.com. Another one is Midphase.com, M-I-D-P-H-A-S-E, midphase.com. Those are all sort of like more the $10 to $15 a month range. So, you know, you can, on those you can do a six-figure launch, no problem. Five-figure launch, no problem. Once you get into the really, the bigger launches, you're going to probably need a dedicated server. I'm using currently Rackspace, which is, they're famed for their support. Rackspace is RackSpace.com. Now, my Rackspace server did crash on me this past March. Wasn't really happy about that, and frankly, they were a little slow getting me back up that day. But since then, they've been really on it, and they're not the cheapest. In fact, they're one of the more expensive ones. They're famed for their great service, and so you're paying more, but they pick up the phone, and the person who picks up the phone is a tech who knows what they're doing. So for a dedicated machine, but you're looking at, you know, $500, $400 or $500 a month if you go with something like that. So that's, you only need them for, you know, a major, major launch. Email provider, this is a question I get a lot. First thing, you don't ever want to run your email, like, you don't ever want your email lists run off of your server. You don't want to use like some type of a mailman or something like that, or autoresponder plus. You don't want those run on your machine, your web server, and you don't want that, because what happens is, unless you have a dedicated full-time staff that maintains relationships with like Yahoo and Gmail and all the other email providers, you're not going to get whitelisted the way you need to be, and you're going to end up getting blocked. Your emails will get blocked. So you need to go with a full-time email provider, an autoresponder service. And so there's lots of different choices. I've used, you know, lots of them. The one that I highly, highly recommend is AWeber. But actually, the one I recommend even more than that is the one. I have basically a private label of AWeber. It's called Profollow, ProFollow.com, ProFollow.com. And that one is, it's basically, you get all, it's run by AWeber, but you know, I've paid a ton of money to get my own domain, and so I'll get a small affiliate commission if you go with them. And so my goal there is to have AWeber provide all the services that you normally get, and then layer on top some extra training material that I'll be loading up soon. I don't have that created yet, but I'm going to be creating some additional training videos that would go along. But basically, Profollow, or you know, if you want to just go with AWeber, they, in my opinion, they're the best. I've been with them since 2003, and I really, I love those guys. Great service, the great deliverability. That's the most important thing when you're doing an email provider. When you're picking an email provider, is to get the great deliverability, and those guys do deliver, and they deliver on time. And literally, your choice of your email provider is going to be the most important choice in your business. I'll say that again. Your choice of your email service provider, your email list host, is the most important choice in your business. It's not hard to switch web hosts. If you pick the wrong web host, you can move your website pretty easily. Moving email hosts is not easy, because usually whoever you pick is going to make you take your list and reconfirm everyone that's on your list, and you'll end up losing some people on your list. So it's not easy to move an email list. It can be done, but it's not easy. So pick carefully. Now, for affiliate software provider and shopping cart, the one that this isn't a whole, you know, a wild endorsement, because these guys have had problems and probably will continue to have some amount of problems, but in other words, they're not perfect, is One Shopping Cart. That's the number one, and then shoppingcart.com, One Shopping Cart. If you go with oneshoppingcart.com, I would, included in the price, I think they started about $30 a month and go up to maybe $60 a month, something like that. If you go with One Shopping Cart, it also includes your email list hosting. If I were you, I wouldn't use their email list hosting. I would go back over to Profollow and use theirs, because you know, in my experience, they Aweber Profilo has better deliverability than One Shopping Cart. And also One Shopping Cart, when you hit click the send button, you're never quite sure if that email is going to go out now or if it's going to go out 6 hours from now. With Aweber, you click that send button and the email goes out. You know, and so if you're going to use One Shopping Cart, don't use them for your email service provider. Use Aweber or Profilo. Another choice in terms of affiliate software, the one I use is Synergix, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y-X, Synergix.com. It's a small company as opposed to One Shopping Cart, which is a big company. Synergix is basically run by Paul Galloway, who's my guy, my tech person. He supports me during my launches. Synergix doesn't have all the fancy bells and whistles, but it works very well. It's very effective, and the support you get from Paul is unparalleled, just fantastic support. I think, and that resides in your server, so Paul will actually install that software in your servers, and I think it's about $1,500 or $2,000, something like that. So it's not inexpensive, and it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It's not super fancy, but what you do is you get a system that works and gives you and someone who you're buying from, someone who gives really good support. For teleseminars, I use one called AccuConference, AccuConference, AccuConference.com. I use them for smaller calls. You know, they're actually pretty expensive, and they're not good for doing big calls. But for doing smaller calls, they allow you to be interactive by allowing you to unmute people individually. And so it's really fancy, and it does some cool stuff. It's just not good for big calls, and it's expensive. So I use them. I use this Instant Teleseminar, which allows you to do simultaneous web broadcasts and teleseminars. And it is, and that one is pretty darn. I have absolutely no idea what that costs, but it's pretty darn reasonable. And then there's what's the other one? John, if you can, what's the other provider that we used last time around?
The other provider we use for Bridgeline is VoiceText.
Yep, VoiceText.
VoiceText, VoiceText.
Yeah. So there's and VoiceText is sort of your classic teleseminar line where you call them up and you can either buy it on a one shot deal. Say I need a call next Wednesday at 4 p.m. and they'll quote you a price for how many lines you want, and they tend to be pretty inexpensive. Or you can say, I need 24/7, just my own line, and you buy it by the month. And when you buy it by the month, then you you can use it anytime you want, and you get X number of lines. So what they'll quote you, like, if you want 200 lines, then it'll be X number of dollars per month, and you have that all the time. And so that's sort of classic old-school teleseminar, how they work. You can either buy them on a one-shot deal or a monthly deal. So VoiceText for just good old-fashioned teleseminars, Instant Teleseminar for, this sort of the voice cast or the webcast teleseminar combo, and then AccuConference for really small, like small groups, small coaching clubs, that type of thing. Those are the three providers that I'm currently using. So that's some of the background stuff. I know a lot of you guys had questions about that. Okay, is there a way to prevent purchasers from distributing an ebook freely? Seems that all these people would be sitting on my blog and can contact each other and just give the book to each other. Is this an unfounded newbie fear? Yes, it is. Generally, this is the deal. Is anytime almost any product you've got, whether it be digital or even physical, some people will steal from you. Some small percentage of people will steal from you. And the people that want to steal from you, they are going to be more invested in stealing from you than you're going to be invested in stopping them from stealing. And the energy that you spend on stopping them from stealing from you, I think, tends to be wasted energy. Because someone's always going to be able to figure out a way to rip you off, but very, very few people will. I mean, you got to believe in the fundamental goodness of people, and I truly do. And so have people rip me off? Yep. Will they rip me off in the future? Yep. But you know what? I find you do the minimal things you can to thwart that, and beyond that, you just move along because all the other the good people are going to they're going to be happy to pay you. So don't worry about it too much. With an ebook, you know there's different ways you can get nice and fancy and stopping people from looking at it, but generally they're Windows PC based. They don't your people who buy from you on a Mac will end up getting, you know, they won't be able to access the thing. So you've eliminated about 8 to 10% of the population right there. They tend to be, you know, these proprietary systems. I don't like proprietary systems myself. They worry me. With a PDF, you can password protect a PDF. And there's different ways to do that. I personally have never done it. Then you're going to have what you're going to do is you're going to create customer service issues. And so, you know, you've created a hassle and a customer service issue for the 98% of the people that aren't going to steal from you. And, you know, to try to stop the 2% that are. So, you know, it's your decision. But in general, it is an unfounded newbie fear. I know I had this partner one time. And this partner was just, he was paranoid, it turned out, which is one of the reasons he's not my partner anymore. And the dude is totally paranoid. And, he wouldn't let us use affiliates because he thought the affiliates were going to rip us off somehow. So, in other words, our business didn't grow like it should have grown. He insisted on password protecting stuff. He just went crazy if anyone ever refunded the product, you know, thinking for sure that people were ripping us off. You know, and he recently in you know, a business I'm no longer involved with, he launched a product and password protected his book. And I know it just ended up irritating more people than that. Because, you know, if someone buys your book, your e-book, and they open it up and maybe they've got the password, but 6 months from now if they want to open it back up, are they going to remember the password? No. So you've just alienated someone, you know, made them mad, when the reality is 98-99% of the people aren't going to steal from you. So, yeah, personally, do the simple, easy stuff in terms of stopping people from, you know, blocking thieves. But your energy is generally better spent on taking care of your good customers and figuring out a better way, you know, ways to serve them better. Okay, I'm a currency. Next question. I am a currency and grain trader, day trader, for 9 years running, and I want to offer some sort of subscription-based service to my future newsletter clients. How precisely did you set up your first business to acquire and maintain clients? I know you've touched on it, but could you delve into it more deeply? Okay, first of all, it's a great business. I mean, it's a great niche. The trading, you know, there's a long history of people paying a lot of money for trading information. The way to do this is, there's a few different ways, but the way I would focus on is I would just start publishing. I would start publishing to a blog, and right off from day one, you know, go get your profollow.com account and then set up a blog and start putting, putting some of your trading information onto the blog. And, you can post commentary, you can post just some background about you, you can post some lessons, but just start posting and try to post regularly. I mean, daily would be perfect, or at least, you know, during the trading days. And what's going to happen is the search engines are going to start to find you, and you're going to start to pull in traffic slowly. But right from day one, you know, put up a form so people can opt in on your page, so you're starting to build your list from the very beginning. And then I'm going to go do it the seed launch. I'll go through the seed launch, but do the seed launch, and start to form a small group of people that are following you that you're publishing to, and then from there, the next step is, you know, once you get your legs under you, once you sort of get the hang of the publishing, you're starting to attract some people, they're starting to tell you what they want, then you start to develop your products. And at that point, you know, once you develop a product and you start to develop an offer, you know, a sales letter and an offer that converts, then you can go out and find partners. And that's where your business starts to grow really fast. Because if you can find partners, you have an offer that converts, you're basically going to them and you're offering them, you know, free money. You're saying, hey, you know, send out an email about my stuff, and, you know, you're going to make X number of dollars. You know, based on my metrics, going back, you know, I can't guarantee this, but based on my metrics, for every visitor you send over to me, you're going to make X number of dollars. Or, you know, even if you're paying on a residual basis, you'll make X number of dollars per month. And so that's the way to do it. I mean, for almost everyone, the first thing I do is I say, go out and start publishing to a blog. Blogs are really easy. You know, I like WordPress. WordPress, you know, is blog software. It's free. It's very easy to install. If you don't know how to install it, you can go to Craigslist and get someone to install it for probably $20 or $30. You can go to WordPress.org and get the software installed on your server. So, you know, you go get your domain name, go get hosted at Midphase or FutureQuest or Lunar Pages, get your domain name, get that hosted, put up the blog on your site. If you can't do it, get someone at Craigslist to pay them, you know, $30 to install it for you. Or you can go to WordPress.com and sign up for one of their, that's where it's hosted on their site. And this is the thing, is like if you just set up your first site, it doesn't have to be beautiful. The thing to remember is your first site's going to be your ugliest site. And, you know, so just put up a site, just start publishing and build some momentum that way and start to draw in. At that point, you're trying to draw in an audience via the search engines. And so put up that blog and start publishing, you know, hopefully a couple times a week, best case is, you know, every trading day. And that gets you in the game. I had two questions here. Let me go find this one. It was sort of fun. 10 days is the question. 10 days? Seriously, I can't wait 10 days. Can you speed it up for me somehow? I've already made it through the material. So I got a couple questions on these modules coming out every 10 days. And this is the deal. You know, last spring when I did PLF 2.0, I ended up burying people. You know, what we did was we ran it. We went with a module every week, and after 2 weeks, people were begging me to ease up on it. And so I actually took a survey asking people if they wanted to have a rest week. So, like, after the first two modules, take off a full week. Well, 85.7% of the people wanted a rest week. So the message I got, and then so then we did two more weeks, and again people were asking for a rest week, so I came back. And I asked again, I surveyed again, and it was once again right at 85% wanted another rest week. So, what we did was we did two modules, took a week off, two modules, took another week off, and then continued on. So the message I got loud and clear was that I was moving too fast and there was too much material for people to get through in 7 days. Now, I know there's always going to be some superstars, you know, those other 15% of the people that were blasting through the material. But what I took from it is that it's a lot more realistic to do it 10 days at a time versus 7 days for a module. So they won't always be 10 days, but it's always going to be around 9, 10, 11 days per module. And I really think that people are going to get the most out of it if you're one of those, you know, 10, 15% of the people that are moving along a lot faster. You know, I apologize. If it's a real problem, you know, send me an email and we'll see if we can figure something else out. But that's why we're doing 10-day modules, because just from experience, I know we'll end up leaving people behind. Okay, next question. How do I submit my work for the hot seat? Down at the bottom of Module 1, there's a link to go put in your request for a hot seat. It takes you over to a survey, fill out that survey, and put in for the hot seat. Now, you know, I've already done some hot seats. I'll be doing more. So you don't have to get them all done right away. I'll be looking at that over the next few weeks, going back to it and pulling from it to create more hot seats. No guarantee that I'm going to get to everyone, but just that's the way to do it. fact, that this is what I can guarantee. I guarantee you, I'm not going to get to everyone. There will be people that, you know, ask for a hot seat that won't get it. But I'll do my best, and I'll be doing those throughout the course. So go ahead, and you don't have to fill it out now. You can fill it out a week from now, and I'll still see the request. This is a good question that I've already sort of touched on. Approximately how often can you have a sale before you lower the perceived value of your product or service? I tend to be conservative with this stuff and obsess over what my list thinks, but I think, you know, 2 times a year is what I went with. Beyond that, I think you're starting to train people that you put stuff on sale and they should wait for it. But 2 times a year is what I went with. I know some people are more aggressive. They'll put stuff on sale more often. The other thing you got to look at is the churn of your list. How many people are joining your list? How many people are leaving your list? So if some lists churn a lot faster, and, you know, after 6 months, it's going to be 70% new people. You know, that a lot of people have left the list, a lot of new people have joined. In that case, you know, you could probably go with three sales a year, or maybe even four. Or you can build a sale in, you know, 10 days, 15 days into your autoresponder after someone joins, you can build a sale in there. So a lot of different ways to do it, but my general answer is, you know, twice a year. Here's the next question. Jeff, you said that during the early stages of the launch, your prospects won't even know you're selling something. How will that be possible if during the pre-launch you hint that you have something in the offing? Well, in this case, I mean, if you hint that something's coming, then obviously they know something's going to be for sale eventually. But they won't, sometimes people are in the earliest stage of the launches, they won't know if something's coming. But, you know, sometimes they will, sometimes they won't, but they won't think they're being sold. When you still do that initial shot across the bow, people are not going to, they're not going to feel like they're part of the sales process. This is the deal. It's like, I don't know if everyone's like this, but like if I go car shopping and I walk onto a car lot, when I walk onto that car lot, I can just feel, physically, I can feel things going on in me where I start to close up and tighten up. And then when I see that salesman start to walk over towards me, I can just feel like in my stomach this sort of clench up. And I go into this mode of like defensiveness. And I think, you know, I think that's what it is about a car lot, I don't know. But I think it happens really strongly in a car lot. But in almost any situation where you're going to be sold to, I think that type of thing tends to show up a little bit. And so what I'm saying is in the pre-launch, when you're starting to talk about, you know, you got something coming, you're thinking about doing this, you need their feedback, I don't think that happens to people. I don't think that happens until they got a lot closer to the actual launch, to the sales letter. And so the more objections that you can answer and the more interested you can make people initially – in that early pre-launch, the better. So, I mean, it's not like we're trying to be, we're trying to trick people. The launch is not about tricking people. It's about romancing them and hooking them and getting them excited before, you know, you really turn into, you know, it really becomes a full-on selling environment. You know, it's definitely not about pulling the wool over people's eyes or tricking people. Next question. How do you reconcile stories such as your IRS sale, i.e. needing money urgently, with selling from a position of strength? Well, that's a good question. I mean, I try to always sell from a position of strength. I mean, in fact, there's no other way I would sell, and there's no other way I could sell because I'm just really not much of a salesman, so I have to sell from strength. Personally, I think if you're selling from strength every day and then you have something come up like the IRS sale, then that's just part of life. People realize things come up. People realize that, you know, there's different situations, just like that spice sale. I don't think that takes away strength. I think saying, I love my product, I love making spices, I love this business, you know, normally I, you know, it's a premium brand, and I'm sorry, but you know, when you get a, you know, if you guys want a premium product, you're gonna pay premium prices. But you know, just in this one instance, I went ahead and mixed up 11 pounds of spices, just because I love this. I love doing it so much. So you know, I don't want the stuff to go to waste. I'd rather have people use this stuff, and so I'm putting it on sale. I don't think that's taking away your strength at all, not one bit. So I think you still are selling from strength there, and frankly, I know it because the results prove it. It's that simple. I mean, I've seen these launches over and over again. I've seen those quick launches, those tax sale types of launches. My pipes burst type of launches, and they're effective and they're powerful and they don't hurt the business going forward. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, I gave you my psychology or what I think, but the bottom line is they work, and from a long experience, they work really, really well. Okay, I think. Here's another. I'm going to open up the lines, or not open the lines. I'm going to start taking some live questions in just a minute. But this is a really is a great question. I like this one a lot. I'm an acupuncturist and have an email list of around 500. My question is: I have a certain reputation and have built a level of trust with my patients. I'm concerned that if I start emailing my list, that it will be seen as being too salesy and pushy, and it could hurt my reputation in practice. Will I be able to get around that with product launches? The answer is yes, absolutely. This is a great question because a lot of people are like this. They're not comfortable with the sales process. And I'm going to make a confession here that I don't really know if I've made this publicly or if I have. It hasn't been very public. And, you know, I was often asked how I developed the whole product launch deal and why I developed this and why it works and stuff like that. And so this is the answer. I've never sold a thing in my life. And when I started publishing online, I was building a list for a weird reason. I was, you know, building a list to make it look good on my resume. I wasn't building a list to sell stuff to. And then after 6 months, I thought, well, I've got a lot of people here. Maybe I can sell some to them. But I was fundamentally, since I'd never sold anything before and I wasn't comfortable with the sales process, I was just like, I wasn't comfortable just selling people, just send them to a sales letter and ask them to pay me. So, you know, it was almost like an avoidance mechanism that I did this launch. I started publishing good stuff, tell them something was coming, and built up to it. And this product launch formula, the whole phenomenon of the product launch, came about because I was fundamentally scared to sell. And so I had to build myself up into it. So as I built myself up into it, you know, I also built up my prospects into it. And it turns out it's like the best way to sell online. It's really weird. It was an accident. It was an accident because I was scared to sell something. I was scared to ask for the order. And this is, you know, more than a decade ago, like 12 years ago, but that's the origins. It's pretty weird, but that's what it is. So I'm sensing the same thing from the person that asked this question. They're just a little uncomfortable with the sales process. So, first of all, you should start emailing your list. You shouldn't, you know, your first email shouldn't be, you know, a sales message. It should be, hey, I know this is the first time I've sent you an email, but, you know, I've been collecting everyone's emails, and I just thought, you know, this is a really cool way to communicate some of the stuff that I've been learning. And so I just wanted to say, hey, and, you know, here's a tip. And then start to give them some tips about, you know, about health, about how to get the, you know, the most out of your treatments, out of, you know, aftercare after an acupuncture treatment, or pre-care, what to do before you go in, or things that tend to go along well with acupuncture treatments, or little known facts about acupuncture. But just, I'm sure it sounds like you got a passion for your business and you've got a strong following, so start sharing some information with them because I know you've got tons of information to share with them. And then after you've been doing that for a few weeks, then you can do this shot across the bow. That's not salesy at all. Say, you know, and I don't know what you're thinking of. I don't know if you're planning on coming out with a new type of treatment, adding someone to your staff, coming out with an info product. I don't know what it is, but do the regular good old-fashioned shot across the bow and gradually pull people into your sales process. And the reality is it's it's not like you're going to come out with like how to get rich in Forex product. You know, I know you're not going to do that. I know you're not going to send them to a website with, you know, a picture of, you know, a wallet bursting with $100 bills flying out of it and crazy stuff like that. Whatever you launch, whatever you sell, is going to be in line with who you are and what your practice is. And so don't worry about it. I mean, just start publishing, involve people in the conversation, do the shot across the bow, create a conversation, and they're going to quickly tell you what they want and how they want to be communicated with. And when you publish via email, just write in your voice, and you're going to be just fine. And that goes for everyone. You just want to write in your voice. And, you know, I mean, if you are just a natural great sales guy and, you know, people on your list, they're expecting that from you. But if you're an acupuncturist or if you're like John Gallagher teaching about herbs and plants, you know, his stuff isn't salesy at all. But he's using all the same triggers, and he's using the sequences, and they work really, really well for him because he's publishing in his voice.